Welcome to the Embodiment Conference 2020, also on behalf of the whole team behind the scenes. Thank you for your attention to another amazing presentation about intimacy and relationship. My name is Ilan Stefani and it's my pleasure to be sponsoring this channel, as I deeply believe that aliveness, embodiment, intimacy, relationship are key to individual and global change. My ongoing somatic research is focused on more and more aliveness for each and every one of us. I tune into the fields of collective trauma, of intimacy, of love and rage, shadow work, and higher level of energy. If you are curious about my work, you might want to catch my presentation on this channel as well as on the main stage. And you can also head over to my website, ilanstefani.com. My methods have been described as an embodiment training for warriors. However, you are so welcome to find out yourself. I teach online and in person. I teach in German as well as in English. Thank you for your attention and please enjoy the following presentation.
So here today, it is my absolute honor to introduce this session. It is the Eros of Embodiment. We're going to let our presenters introduce themselves. The Eros of Embodiment is a reclamation of the sacred nature of our body. Our embodied erotic nature is beyond what we do. It is a proclamation of how we feel. In the embodied works of Black lesbian activist and poet Audre Lorde in 1984, the erotic is the open and fearless underlining of our capacity for joy. In this workshop, participants are invited to witness a partnership of difference and unity framed in justice, equity, diversity, and inclusivity centered around the social justice movement in Black, Indigenous, and people of color communities and their accomplices. So without further ado, our speakers.
Well, thank you so much, Carrie, and thank you, Marta. And hence, Jay, and welcome to all of you that are tuning in, wherever you might be from around the world. I see someone from West Oakland. I know my friend Janet's here from New York. I saw someone from Ontario, Canada, up in the chat field earlier. So, hey, welcome. Thank you all so much for being here. And to my esteemed colleague and friend, Dr. Sherry Taylor, thank you so much for joining me.
Yes,
it's been such a joy to get to know you. Hi, Mary from San Francisco. You know, it's been such a pleasure to get to know you, Sherry, and to have the conversation like we're about to have tonight.
Oh my gosh, I'm so excited. We've been talking about this forever.
Yes, yeah, we have been really. I mean, really, since we met, Sherry and I met, we were both faculty members of a somatic psychology program back in the day, and it's where we originally met, and we started having conversations at work around this idea of, you know, what is it like to come from these backgrounds that Sherry and I hold, Indigenous background, Black background, and where do we show up in the field? Mm-hmm. When so much of our text that we learn, and then also what we teach students is centered in this framework, where we oftentimes will see modalities that come from or mirror traditions that we have in our culture. They're just not called that. They're given some fancy name or some fancy author has co-opted it. And we sort of sit in these programs, we sit in these faculty meetings and we go, I wanted to just really start a little bit and say, hey, who am I? My name is Roger Kuhn. I'm a member of the Porch Band of Creek Indians. And tonight I am speaking to you all in Palm Springs, California. This is not my home. I'm happen to be on a vacation, work from home vacation at the moment, but I am in the Kahua territory and the Southern Paiute territory. And I offer that all to you all to say that I am on unceded land, which most of you, if you are in the United States or Canada or Mexico, you are on a territory and land which has been colonized. And that's a big central piece of my work personally as a professional in the academic field of sexuality and also in therapy as a somatic sex therapist, a land recognition. And I encourage all of you that are listening, if you don't know whose land or whose territory you are now upon, go to the Apple or the Google Play Store and download a free app called Native Land. Mm-hmm. You can also find this native-land.ca as a website. And it's a GPS, a geolocation-based service where you can type in a city across the US or Canada, and really throughout the world now, and find out more about the indigenous people that are there. And then go back to maybe where you grew up if you're from the US or Canada. Maybe you moved to California, but you're from North Dakota like me. And do you know who those original inhabitants are of that land that you grew up? And how does that shape you? How does that inform you? Has it in any particular way? Yes, the name of the app is called Native Land, N-A-T-I-V-E, Land, L-A-N-D. And you can find it on the Google Play Store or the Apple Store, and it's a free service. In addition to my work as an academic and a psychotherapist, I'm also married. I've been with my husband for almost 14 years. And I'm just about to finish my doctoral degree. So just a few more months, maybe next time when I come back here, you'll say, hey, Dr. Kuhn. I'll say, hey, what's up? So with that, I'm gonna turn it over to my friend Sherry to introduce yourself and tell us a little bit more about your.
Thank you. So glad to be here. So glad to see all of these wonderful folks in the chat and those who've come to sit with us in conversation. Shout out to all the students who are also my teachers. But okay, so let me introduce myself. My name is Sherry Taylor. I am the daughter of Willie G and Ernestine Taylor. I am calling in tonight from the unceded Huchin territory of the Chokinyo Ohlone people, who, by the way, are still alive, very much here. And I'm also, you know, I did this thing recently. I want to recognize the watershed that I'm on, right? I am on the Saucel Creek watershed, and that feels important somehow also to recognize the water, because it all flows into one big water. And then I would also like to give thanks and call in my ancestors and my guides that brought me to this point to have this conversation with you, wherever it's about to take us. My background is in clinical psychology. I went to the Wright Institute in Berkeley, California, by way of a feminist studies degree from Stanford. I am an ordained minister, and that's how I work with people. My work is definitely psycho-spiritual. I do a lot of, my through line is trauma, and quite importantly, the trauma of oppression of all kinds, and the trauma that leaves us feeling like we don't belong. So I think that is very relevant to the conversation tonight, and I'll have a chance to say a little bit more about what I've put together about that. So thanks for having me. I'm really excited to do this with you, Roger.
Oh, well, thank you. I appreciate that. I think it's important to really start there with the ancestors. And I want to just take a moment to really acknowledge, you know, my ancestors that also provided the space for me to be here. I come from a lineage of people that were not able to go on to school by a certain grade. And so for me to be able to even have this opportunity as an Indigenous person to have an international platform like this is a testament that my ancestors are here with me tonight. And I know they're looking after both of us, Sherry. And also a great place to start, because think about what I mentioned earlier, you know, traditions that have deep embodied practices, whether that be through spiritual practices, through dancing, through music, through chanting, or through actual physical work or creation of art. And if we really think about, Sherry and I, when we were talking a few weeks ago, when we were really thinking about, like, how are we defining the erotic? What does that even mean to say eros? It's a synonym for creativity. It's a synonym for pleasure. And so when you think about how do we who work in this field of psychotherapy, spiritual therapy, and social justice work, how do all of these things align from a creative place, which is also centered on pleasure, when the topics can oftentimes be viewed as very heavy by maybe outsiders? But those of us that are living this life know that we just rely upon these embodied practices, which have been passed down to us from generations, as a way that we can source ourselves and be with ourselves at any given moment. And I really wanted to talk about this idea that what I hope that you all take from this tonight is less of an extraction about what Sherry and I say, and more about how does this apply to your own practice? How can you actually think about yourself in a new way? How might our conversation shift your positionality and your epistemology tonight? And in particular, since we're talking about embodiment, how might your soma epistemic ideology shift? And I want to start off with this idea of ethnocentricity. And for those of you that may not be aware of what that term means, it just means that when you think that your culture is superior to another and you force others to practice similar ideologies that you uphold. So I find that, like, you know, how does like a soma ethnocentric lens impact all of us in this way that we think about certain kinds of bodies, even in this conference, right? You know, that this idea that pioneers in the field or leaders in this field look a certain way or behave a certain way. And how might we really think about what we're all striving for here is really the idea of ethno-relativism, that idea that I can see the difference in you and I honor it as valid. I can see the difference in you and I celebrate it and I learn from you. So I use a term called soma ethno-relativism. And I just encourage you all to sort of start to think about that for your own life, for your own practice, as Sherry and I move into our conversation. Like, how can we think about the ways in which soma ethnocentricity and soma ethnorelativism are a part of the eros of embodiment? And the way that we structure this tonight is we've just kind of broken it down into three specific topics around this idea of eros and embodiment. And Dr. Taylor, would you like to say a little bit more before we jump into things?
Sure. I just want to, first of all, I feel called to just be like, there's a saying right now that I came from teaching and I just want to say it. I've learned it from Bayo Akomolafe, and it is, the times are urgent, let us slow down. Mm. So I feel like I got to start from that ground. And I guess what I did want to say is I wanted to just bring a little bit more texture, right? A little bit more embodiment to the concept of the erotic. And of course, I'm going to go straight to Audre Lorde and just kind of just quickly outline, right? I think it's a nice frame before we go into these three topics. So the what, like what is the erotic? What is eros? You know, Roger, you very concisely said, right? It's a synonym for creativity, for pleasure. And, you know, just very specifically, Audre Lorde says that the erotic isn't just the question of what we do, but it's like how acutely we can feel, right? Mm-hmm. How acutely we can actually feel in the doing. So that's the what. So this is the territory we're in, right? It's also about life force, right? It's about your life force. I think literally, quite literally, like the sponsor of this program said, more aliveness. Right?
Yeah.
More aliveness. The function, right? Audre has something to say about the function. About the function, it provides the power that comes from sharing deeply in any pursuit with another person, right? Mm. Anytime we're working towards, anytime we're building, anytime we're in conversation, like there's eros flowing right now, right here, across Zoom.
Yes. Yeah,
eros
yes.
doesn't care about Zoom. Right? And it also, again, is this open and fearless underlining of our capacity for joy. And joy is a complicated subject. That's a whole nother talk. But joy isn't just about feeling good, right? Again, it's about embracing life. And then finally, the effect. And this is where I get really excited because, right, she literally says, and I believe it because I've lived it and I've seen it, you know, that when we're in touch with Eros, we become less willing to accept powerlessness or those other supplied states of being, which are not native to us, such as resignation, despair, self-effacement, depression, and self-denial. If that is not a remedy to oppression, I don't know, right? And we're gonna make this more robust, right? We're gonna get it bodied, as Beyonce might say.
Yes. Hey.
So yeah, and so we broke do it down flawless into three things, right? We broke it down into three things. So it's the container. We're going to talk a little bit about the container of our work. We're going to talk about intimacy. And then we're going to talk about justice. Right? Those are our three things.
So I'm thinking, you know, this idea of how does containment look in our work? And I just want to share with you all that what inspires my work as a researcher in the field around this topic of embodiment is really powwow. I'm really interested in how, for those that might not be from the States or from Canada, a powwow is a way in which First Nations, Indigenous, Native American people get together and celebrate dance, drum, community. And so my work specifically research focuses on how two-spirit people, which would be identified as folks that experience gender variance or sexual orientation variance and are also Indigenous, how they find community. And one way that I see that happen is in the embodiment practice of Indigenous dancing. Mm-hmm. And in particular, one thing that's really interesting about the community that I'm a part of in the Bay Area American Indian Two Spirits is that what we've done in our dancing, what we've done in our powwow is that we've made our dancing a gender neutral category, which I think is really important, you know, to really talk about, like, how do we show up, right? Mm-hmm. So if you have gender variance, or you have sexual orientation variance, and you grew up watching a particular dance style. And this goes for non-Indigenous dancing, classical ballet, et cetera. But when we have these dance practices that are very gendered in certain ways, and you want to be a part of that dance, if you want to, say, dance shawl dance, or you want to dance jingle dress, but you weren't raised to do that, how might you feel from an embodied perspective? How does it feel to walk around in that way of knowing, like, I may never be able to do that mm-hmm. style of dance? And what is required for someone to hold their body in a certain way with pride? So in what we've done at Bates around this idea of containment around that is we say, hey, let's just strip this idea of gender in our dance categories. Anybody that wants to show up and dance shawl, anybody that wants to show up and dance jingle, you are welcome to. Anybody that wants to dance chicken dance, et cetera, et cetera. It's a way in which folks can come and show up as they are. And if that is not also a way to help oppression, to be able to show up as you are, to show up in your authenticity, to show up in a full embodiment. We have a term in Muskoki, which is the language that my people, Creek people, speak, Anokachigo. And that word roughly translates to love, but not the way that we think of romance. It doesn't mean, I love you. It means community. Mm-hmm. It means that I'm in relation with you in community. And so when I think about the Bates powwow, or when I think about two-spirit gatherings, that's the word I think of as Anokachigo. And I think that's community, and that's a containment that for people to heal in, a space specifically for Indigenous two-spirit people to heal, to do the work that's necessary for them to come back into their body, which has been so colonized for 528 years. Mm-hmm. It's a reclamation, you know, mm-hmm. and a way to be creative and a way to find and be in pleasure with others. And I know you've been. I know you've been there, Sherry. I've seen you a couple times at the powwow. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I love it. I love it. I know when we were talking about this, we kind of, there was a part, and I think this ties into, this is how we tied it into, like, the work that I do. So one of the things that I do is work with dreams, and work with dreams in a very specific way. So I host this very emergent and conjured space called Black Women's Dream Lab. I'm the guardian, right? I hosted with a colleague of mine. And, you know, when we were talking, what we kind of framed both sort of powwow and this is that the body becomes the storyteller in both of these spaces, right? The body tells the story via the dream. Yeah. And then we work with the dream. and invite the body to tell its story. And then of course, you know, participating, being at Powwow, it's incredible, right? It's the bodies are telling the stories. And what we said, Roger, right, is that it tells the story of our survival, right? Of our resilience, yeah. of our joy. It's a place where we can also tell the story of our sadness and our grief, right? Which is another That's thing right. that I find dreams make much more available to people. Like it's much more, the people that I work with, the Black women with an X, women with an X, Black women, femmes, non-binary folks, gender non-conforming, but femme identified. Grief becomes much more approachable. Right. When we're in conversation in the dream space. So that's become my container, you know, the body and the dream for the purpose of, and I think I see this at Powwow as well, is to heal our imagination because oppression traumatizes your imagination. Mm-hmm. And if it can if it gets your imagination, it's gotcha. Right.
Right.
Because you can't see any other way. You can't create a vision for other ways of relating to yourself, to your community, to your, you know? So it feels really important. And that's something that of late that I've been thinking a great deal about is the importance of healing, spaces for healing our imagination, right?
I know the other day when we were chatting, you said something that I jotted down that I really loved, that dreaming as a technology of the body. And I want to hear a little bit more, like how does that, like, as a technology of the body apply to like an embodied perspective?
Well, you know, first of all, every culture has a dreaming tradition, right? That existed before Freud and those dudes came online, you know? And dreaming traditions, I mean, I see the body, I see dreaming as a technology of the body. It's a way that your eros in some way, right? Dreaming is the landscape of eros. Dreaming is the landscape of the imagination. Dreaming, it presents you with, you know, potentially, you know, apocalyptic truths, like things you can't move away from, right? This, like, people have recurring dreams. What is that?
Yeah.
Right? That's a communication. So in some of this, you know, I'm working out my own theories, but yeah, dreaming as a technology of the body, right? And how that works into embodiment is one of the constant threads and the most important things that I feel the Dream Lab offers to its participants. We are constantly talking about embodiment, right? Both from a physical, structural, physical container way, but also from that perspective of the health and well-being of our relational life, those relational containers, right? The containers that we actually have to feel into our aliveness, right? Because it's more than we do that with more than just our bodies.
Right. And that that aliveness is what helps us in this idea of a reclamation of healing, as this reclamation of like the survival that you spoke about earlier. And I'm really interested in this concept that Gerald Visoner has, where he talks about survivance, this indigenous concept of resistance and survival create survivance. And so I think about like, well, what is erotic survivance? Mm-hmm. How do we use dreams? How do we use dance? How do we use a community in action as a way, as a reclamation of the erotic, to rewrite our narratives of resistance and survival? And I think about, like, you know, erotic, you know, if the erotic is already an embodiment, you know, if, you know, we can already say that if we possess eros, we are in possession of embodiment. Right, then there's this way that erotic survivance is an embodied practice. Dream work, dancing, community, these are all ways that, again, if we're applying that soma ethno-relativistic viewpoint, we should be including these more so in the ways in which we educate people in the field. Yeah. And really, these lessons should be coming from people like you and I, as opposed to, you know, having like a one subset, a 1 week lesson in a classroom, right? Really centering this idea and really then, you know, like sharing these practices, you know, this idea of erotic survivance, this idea of dream labs. The term two-spirit came from a dream that, you know, an elder Myra Laramie had and shared that with folks. So, you know, even in, you know, we can see like the importance dreams can shift.
Yeah.
They can create movements.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right. And really like, and movement is action and action is embodiment. Right. And
well, and I, so this feels like a natural segue into maybe this, when I hear you say, because it's very true, right? The history is full, and you know, you would be actually surprised at the number of historical events that were driven by dreams. Somebody had a dream, somebody had a vision, somebody went to an oracle, this, that, and the other to this day. So, but I think that when I hear you say, you know, dreams initiate movement, this is where I, again, kind of the next piece that I might bring to the conversation is Black Women's Dream Lab in particular, right? Allows Black women to experience the eros of care and community, right? And that is a level of intimacy and depth that is often not available to us in this world currently, you know, I mean, to a lot of people, right? But this is a space that you know, sort of I'm committed to holding, right? A space where people, because there is an eros to community, right? To extending care, to receiving care. You know, that's one of the things that I think dreaming teaches, right? And that's, and we just talked about it at a recent session. It's, we talked about the importance of, for Black women in particular, women with an X, to learn and practice receiving, because we are so accustomed to our labor being extracted from us, right? So dreaming, we practice rest. We talk about the medicine of rest and restoration. You know, I send people to the NAP Ministry Instagram all the time. We also learn the very scientific pieces of it, right? There is a sleep gap. There is this, you know, but it's all for the purpose, right, of creating this way that you can then receive, right? Receive your dreams, receive care, be in community. There's a whole host of ripple effects, right, that begin to happen out of that, right? And one of the pieces of feedback that I often get, or that we often get, is just how the depth of feeling community, right? Like, and it's not just a group dream, you know, it's not a dream. Yeah. It's like, it really becomes its own ecology, right? People start having dreams for each other. People start dreaming for each other. It's a very, very, yeah. People have ancestral visitations, right? People make decisions to get more connected with their ancestors. All of that to me is the way, is an important form of embodied practice for folks of color, for BIPOC, for anyone who, you know, for all people who have, you know, lived under this awful and anti-erotic society, right?
That's right, right?
Yeah.
You know, I was working with a student a couple of years ago, and I said to her, you know, when we fail to process the erotic, it becomes eroticized, you know, and this idea of eroticization happens to, and it happens to, and it happens on a lesser extent to Indigenous men or those that might be identified as men, mostly because of this colonial view that you have to, again, extract people from the land in order to claim it. And you need those women's bodies to produce more people so that they can then take over the land, et cetera, right? So it's like when you come from these legacies, like we do, of attempted genocide, and that, like, you know, legally, my people weren't able to practice their spirituality or what people would call religion until 1978. You know, I was already born before the United States decided to grant indigenous people the right to practice a ceremony legally, right? So it's like, how do we, when we are part of these communities, which oftentimes we get tokenized in embodied communities because there are less of us, right? So suddenly we become the keepers or the holders of this knowledge. And, you know, I wanna talk a little bit more about that depth piece, about like, how do we take these legacies of again, what might feel like very heavy, and approach them in a way that offers us joy, that offers us the opportunity to connect with other people, to be in community with others in a way that feels good, in a way that is that it comes from a decolonial framework. You know, and I think about like what I call in my work, I call it sexual sovereignty, or you could call it erotic sovereignty. And it's really this idea, you know, when I talk about that, it's again, this reclamation of my body, right? That like, if I have sovereignty as an Indigenous person, what does that mean? You know, is that only referring to land? Well, if it is, I'm a body on that land. And I come from a lineage, again, where the idea of sexuality was forced upon us from this very Western colonial mentality. And how can I reclaim my identity? How can I come back into my circle? How can I be proud of who I am fully if I'm not claiming my sexual sovereignty, my embodied sovereignty? And part of that, the way that I look at that is through this idea of love. And through this idea of service and thinking, you know, in this way of, I quickly looked up before I got here today, like, is embodied a noun or a verb? I should know this. I should know this. And it's both. It's both, you know, embodied is the verb and embodiment is the noun. But I was also thinking, but embodiment is also action, right? If embodiment is an action, therefore it's a verb, right? So like, I'm thinking about these ways of embodiment as our call to action, like what you and I do in the world for our communities, you know, is this embodied action way that we can be embodied and embodiment is of service. And that action of coming from a community perspective, as of so much, I think, of embodiment focuses on an individual that we forget about these larger communities. And I think about, gosh, the people that organized this conference, the extreme community focus that they had is so needed in our field to move away from, you know, can we start including mindfulness from in this community sense? As opposed to like leaving it up to this individual. When Bessel van der Kolk says the body keeps the score, we're also talking about a collective body, right? Mm-hmm. We're not just talking about an individual. We're talking about ancestral legacy, right? We're talking about this trauma that you spoke about a moment ago, right? And how that's in us. Yeah, go ahead.
No. There was just something that you said that, you know, I don't know. Sometimes it happens to me like that. But when you know, one of the things that I also believe that things like Powwow, that the Black Women's Dream Lab, that queer spaces, that Pride Parade, you know, that Trans March, that all of these spaces do is that they also, I'm gonna say it. So I sometimes am concerned about the fetishization of trauma for communities that have been historically, I will call them historically resilient communities, because as much as the body keeps the score of its trauma, the body keeps the score of its joy. But you got to invoke it. You got to invoke it.
That's right.
That's right. They need spaces where that memory can be invoked.
That's right.
And it's not that there aren't people who study trauma and, you know, and all of this applies to relationship and intimacy, right?
Of course, that's right.
So, you know, and I just want to much respect to everyone who is doing trauma research. And I know that there are some who are holding that also, but I just needed to amplify it in this space, right? Because I do think when we start thinking about embodiment and relationship and intimacy with self and community and the land, from that perspective, then now there's room for things like powwow to be like, you know, mm-hmm. or, you know, that's a right. dream lab, or you see what I'm saying? Like, I just, that's I've right. been thinking about that lately, because I feel like part of my scholarly interest, research, you know, lived, what I'm trying to do while I'm here in this dimension is to, consider, right, the transmission of benevolence, joy, and resilience in addition mm-hmm. to the transmission of trauma, mm. right?
Yeah.
Particularly for, you know, communities such as those that we love and live in, you yeah. know? I hear enough about all the ways that Black people have been traumatized.
Same, you know, I think that, you know, that's one of the things that, you know, I think, what I appreciate about our partnership mm-hmm. is that we come from these communities that have been incredibly traumatized. And we don't really talk about that much, you know, between the two of us, right? And quite honestly, like, you know, I might be in my group of Indigenous folks or my Two Spirit circles that I hang out with. And sure, the topic comes up from time to time, but we largely spend the majority of our time in joy, in community, because it's just what you said there a moment ago, like, when we do have space for things like powwows, gatherings, and dream labs, there is a justice element that comes to that. And I want to weave into that Let's now. Get into it. And I yeah. do want to say that I did see a question from someone that's listening named Holly that asks about like digging deeper, like how do we dig deeper for joy? Mm. And I think this is a really great place to answer that, Holly, which is that, you know, and I can only speak for myself, but it's really like I found something that I am so incredibly passionate about, that I am so deeply embodied about, and that is helping Two-Spirit people return to the circle, helping Two-Spirit people find their voice. And to me, that is the most joyful thing that I can imagine. Is to be in service with my community, to be of service with my community. Again, that's that action-oriented embodiment. And so Holly and those that are listening, you know, find something that you believe in, whatever that might be, and find a way to bring it into an action. Get out of your head with it, right? Get into the body and move it in some way. What do you say, Sherry?
Yeah, I love this. And I'm so glad that we got here. Just trusting the process. So I, you know, and I love, what I love about this is that we hold our own perspectives. So, you know, what mm-hmm. I would want to offer to anyone who's wondering about joy or digging deep is that, you know, I said this to a class that I teach last night, like feel it, right? That's the joy. Mm. To me, joy is about the capacity to feel. Again, joy for me, how I'm framing it, it's not about feeling good or feeling happy. It's about a deep, you know, being willing to take the risk to deeply participate in life, period. Whatever that means, right? Mm. And that's where it feels, it ignites this movement for justice, because I want that for everyone. You know, same. I want that for same. Everyone. Yeah. I want deep participation in life, not surface, mm-hmm. you know, mm-hmm. not one of these, what did Audrey call them? Supplied states of being, right? And I have to credit kind of my wrestling with that to a dream that I had, right? That I call the Reapers, you know? Yeah. So deep participation.
There's something about that around even sort of like the risk that sometimes one takes in that, and or the vulnerability that requires. And, you know, as you were talking about like feel it, you know, mm-hmm. I was reminded that oftentimes we get the feelings of joy and anxiety confused, you know, because the innervation of the nerves is similar. So it's like, oh, wait, I'm really anxious, but I'm really joyful at the same moment too, right? Both can coexist and, right? Sometimes we have to understand that sometimes when we're in the thick of something, when we're at a protest, mm-hmm. when you are fighting corporations to get their oil pipelines out of your land, when you are making claims against violence against the body, when you are fighting for your land and your sacred sites back, because it's, you know, it's that old adage that says, you know, like, we are our ancestors' wildest dreams come true. We're still fighting. You know, you didn't win. Our people are still surviving. We're still thriving. And we feel deeply. And that feeling state is so important to think about. That's that embodied state again.
Right. You know, and I mean, I also want to, you know, and it's at scale, right? It's also when you have a conversation with someone and maybe you struggle a bit, but you stay in relationship. Right?
Yes.
To me, right, justice flies in the face of all of these ways where we are socialized to be separate or to one up, one down each other, right? Because mm-hmm. it's also not, like, this is, like I said, I could talk about that one forever. But you know, there is one thing I want to say is that there's a quote from a book that I have that, again, like I said, as a diasporic being, you know, African-American person, Black American, I pull from lots of things, right? Because that's a part of my culture, right? So there's a book called Soul Making by Alan Jones. And there's just one quote in there that I just, oh, and it's look, weep, live. That's it. Mm. Mm. That's embodiment to me.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. Yeah.
But you gotta let yourself do that, right? Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Right. Joy is not turning away from anything that life, right? I don't. Anyway, yeah.
Whoo. So I just popped up and saw another question that yes. someone from Mexico is chiming in. Hi, mm-hmm. is it Kai or Key? Mm-hmm. Nice to see you. They say that they're struggling to build, maintain spaces of self-care, imagination, healing, and collective spaces because activists themselves offer not to consider them essential in a context of increasing violence. Yeah. So do you have any tip regarding the promotion of healing spaces and social movements? Well, I think, you know, yes, you know, of course. I think that the conference, you know, is one of those examples of, you know, a conference like this existing. But also when we think about, at least, you know, I can speak for my community as one that comes from culture, that loss of land is up for a loss. You know, to have an eye, I think fundamentally agree that community is one of the keys to the eros of embodiment. And therefore, you know, if we can remind ourselves, especially those of us that are on this land in the United States and in Mexico and Central America and Canada, that we come culture, it's actually indigenous to, that's what's indigenous to this land, community is. And therefore it's so important to think about always having community space as part of these movements where people can go together. Whatever that looks like, whether it's at a community center, whether it's at somebody's house, whether it's a spot in the woods, whatever you might have, but to have that space where you can come together in those moments to feel the joy of connection. Because mm-hmm. when you're out in these spaces and you are using your body and you are using your voice in very strong ways mm-hmm. to come back to see your friend, to see your community member and say, thank you for showing up. Thank you for putting your body on the line like I put mine on. I see you. And I see you seeing me, that gives me joy. And that's that erotic connection that people can have in that moment of intimacy.
Right.
And that vulnerability there.
Yeah, I think you answered that beautifully. I would only add that to Key or Kai, thank you for the question. And mm-hmm. That's hard. That's hard because I think, again, the times are urgent. We must slow down. And so part of what, you know, some of the framework for, again, this imagination, embodiment, dream work, these spaces of, you know, joy and survivance and celebration, but also grief and sorrow, right? Where it can all be held, where it can all be told, is because those are, oh gosh, now I'm gonna sound, I'm a minister, y'all, I told you. So those are the spaces, those are the spaces of prophecy. Like this is where I have to think about Octavia Butler. You know, those are the places where the artists are, right? Those are the places where we get these ideas. We get the most outrageous ideas might come up, you know? And that's not to dismiss any other element. We need it all, right? One of the classes I teach is human development, and we need everybody, right? We need the people who are making the sandwiches behind the scenes just as much as we need the people on the front lines. We need the people who are very anxious and looking around, you know, from like a body-based perspective. We need the people who have high anxiety, just like we need the people who are, you know, the who move toward risk and danger. Does that make sense?
Yes. Yeah.
But we need it all. We need it all. But I find I'm trying to create and encourage spaces of imagination so that all manner of outrageous things can be born.
Mm-hmm. I love that. Yeah. I know that we are also coming up on time already, if you can believe it. And so I just wanted to shout out to the folks that are listening here today. If you have a question, now would be a great time to throw that out. I was able just to catch a few of those as I saw them pop up on the chat field. But if there are other questions, please feel free to let us know. And Sherry, I'm just curious, you know, if in this idea of what we frame together, what's next for you?
Ooh.
What's next for you? Yeah.
What? What do you mean what's next
for me? Well, I mean, you know, I don't know. I mean, like, you know, where do you see your dream labs going, or where do you see like the formation of additional dream labs, or, you know, this idea?
Yeah. So the dream labs literally kind of create themselves. They move at the pace of spirit, I do have a vision that for there to be cross-cultural, multicultural, multi-generational cross-cultural dream labs. You and I have our standing writing dates. So we're, you know, you're writing your work. I'm working on really, theorizing, but also theorizing in a queer and embodied fashion where, you know, I hold Audre Lorde and James Baldwin with the same reverence and legitimacy as I do Winnicott and Bowlby. You know what I'm saying?
Yes.
So
yes.
Mm-hmm. Writing, holding these labs, growing them accordingly, you know, and I'll just say like they have grown. One of the recent dream labs that happened in the midst of the pandemic, you know, I have to say it how I have to say it. Spirit told me to donate all of the funds to the Marsha P. Johnson Institute. And so we were actually able to donate like close to $2,000 to that, you know.
That's amazing.
And it doesn't look like that every time. This is heart work, you know. It's meant to be kept affordable. It's not about like, oh, now it's about to be elitist and we're gonna be out here dreaming and it's only for some. No one has ever turned away from the Dream Lab because of different levels of resources. So where I'm going is wherever spirit wants me to go. Oh, it is definitely going to get bigger. Where are you going?
Well, you know, I just plan on causing good trouble. That seems to be what I'm at. So just causing
both,
some good trouble. That's it. Making sure that we continue to have these conversations that, you know, my goal for myself, for you, for folks that come from BIPOC and marginalized communities is that we're given a permanent seat at this table. This is my second time I've been invited to the Embodiment Conference, and I'm so fortunate. It feels to me that, like, okay, you know, these issues are important to this community, And I want to continue being a voice for that, to raise these issues, to raise that idea of Somo ethno-relativism and sexual sovereignty, erotic survivance, and the eros element, to keep pleasure. The body is to feel pleasure and joy and connection and love. So that's what I'm doing. That's all good trouble, real good trouble. And I know I'm going to do it with you. So, hey, anybody else that wants to join us, please, we've got a lot of trouble to make. So
that's what we're doing. Yeah, definitely. Definitely. Amplify
yeah.
all of
this. Yeah. Thank you, everyone, for being here. And I think, Carrie Ann, we're almost at our time, eh?
So we actually have about 4 minutes and we just got a question. So this person, Sarah asks, finds the community thing hard to relate to because I have lived in self-isolation for nearly 30 years, have no close friends, and my family is not tight-knit. Where do I begin to serve a community when I have no idea what that even means or how it feels?
Well, hey. Right. Let this be the start right now. You know, let this be like a place where, you know, when I mean this place, I mean the embodiment conference. You know, find other like-minded. There's literally thousands of like-minded people right here. Connect with folks. You know, look me up on Facebook. Join embodiment circles. Community is sometimes you're born into it. And sometimes we create it, and you know anybody that showed up here today, you know, says to me that you want to be in community with me, with Sherry, with our work, with these ideas and these principles that we're bringing forward. So know that you already have a community. I believe it was Sarah. So welcome to it. Welcome to the love. Welcome to Onoga Jigo.
Oh, Sarah, you said this is the best place. So there it is right there, right? Community is also emergent. That's the thing, right? And I think we were talking about dynamic systems theory in a class earlier. And I think this is the part where, you know, savor this moment, right? Savor our time together right now. Like, it's a fiction. It's a lie, you know, that we can't have community, right?
That's right.
And I also want to really respect and honor there are ways that our communities have done harm to us, right?
Oh, yes.
Right? Oh, yes. But, and also, it's absolutely available to you, and it's important to refine your discernment for when you feel it. That's that feeling part,
yes,
right?
Yes.
Something is telling you right now that this is the best place you could possibly be. Get in touch with that and start to track it, right? Because for sure, it'll start to grow, right? And you can start to make contact with community that, you know, resonates with you. Yeah, that's it.
Yeah. Oh, yes.
See, that's what we're talking about. All right.
I would certainly, as we all sit here and just absorb this, Eros.
All right.
Being asked to share in the chat any books, resources, certainly would want for you to drop how we can locate you and follow your work. The best places to do that in the chat would be phenomenal.
Mm-hmm.
And if you wanted to, you have about 2 minutes, if you wanted to, you know, briefly mention a certain resource, take it away.
Yeah, sure. I'll point people to my website, kumarj.com. Dr. Taylor just popped hers into the chat as well, sherryid.com. And there you can find my work. As I mentioned, I'm a sex therapist, I'm a psychotherapist, and I'm also a sexuality scholar. And I have a chapter in a book, Diverse Bodies, Diverse Practices, which is a phenomenal book about embodiment coming from different cultural perspectives in here too. This is Don Hamlin Johnson. Some of you may know Don Johnson for the work he's done in the embodiment field. And Sherry, anything else you would like to add?
I mean, no, I don't know. I'm not that, I mean, Audre Lorde, James Baldwin, you know, Mary Oliver, Thomas Merton, nature, outdoors, grass, dirt, air, wind. I'm playful, mm-hmm. but I'm also very serious. No, I think, you know, I put my website in there, and, you know, I have a little contact thing, and, you know, I like to think about what I would offer rather than just, you know, but I definitely say, you know, Audre Lorde's essay, Uses of the erotic as power is a good mm-hmm. place to start. Adrienne Marie Brown, Emergent Strategy, and pleasure activism, you know?
Yes, exactly. Yeah.
I love just the sound of that. Pleasure activism.
That's right.
It's the perfect description of what you expressed today. It's like those two things can live simultaneously. And that's part of, I think, what our embodiment brings to us. I was sitting here enjoying Sarah's moment. And I recall feeling that way when I discovered this community, you know, I guess it was 2 years ago in the first conference. And then I got an opportunity to train with Mark in embodied yoga principles. So, you know, this is, you know, my part of the spiel where I say, you know, I'm not paid to be here, but wow, you could pay the people who have run this conference for the value that you have received, because they do this free because they want to make it available to people. And certainly I took so much advantage of those freebies, and they served me so well. But when I came into an opportunity to give back to the community, I have done that. So if that's available to you, I wanted to make sure that you have the link to, in fact, upgrade. And the two of you, I just want to mention, I'm going to give you an opportunity to give us one golden nugget each, you know, like a 30-second golden nugget top tip. And I'm going to go ahead and add those coffee break links in here again while you're thinking about it. Conversation. We did stream on Facebook. And so you can head over there underneath the chat. It'll be up for, or underneath this conversation, it'll be up for 48 hours. So that would be a great place looking for community. There's also a coffee break. So check that out. So, Roger, Sherry.
Okay. My top tip is to find your truth, whatever that means for you. To find your truth, and or to be on the journey of your truth, however you want to define that. And the best way that I know to do that is to honor my ancestors. And honor my personal values, and honor my body and the bodies of those I'm around.
This is like the hardest question for me to answer. Okay. I think I can only answer it with a little tiny story, which is I was interviewed on a podcast, and the interviewer asked me, what would I have wanted to tell my younger little self? And I had a hard time figuring that out, you know? But thankfully, I had a session with my spiritual director and come to this. And so this is what I would want everyone to know. It's you the world wants. That's it. It's you. It's you the world wants.
Speak that aloud. Thank you very much. I will carry this in my heart. Thank you all for attending. We'll see you online. Have a wonderful.
Thank you all. Thank you all. Mado. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you, Sherry.
Thank you, Roger.